Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is Medical Monday, and of course, this is Heart Month. We're talking about heart health, and you know, you got to take care of your ticker. My guests are Dr. Brian Curry. He is a Howard University cardiologist. We also have Gail Harris-Berry. She is an American Heart Association ambassador, as well as a heart attack survivor. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, Dr. Curry, you wanted to talk about an event that's actually happening in a couple of weeks. Is it a couple of weeks or is it next week? What's going
on? A week from Tuesday at Howard University Hospital, we have our heart health fair in the ambulatory care auditorium from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can get a blood pressure screening, cholesterol, glucose. There will be an Ask the Doctor station. It's free, and anyone can come on out, and you can meet some of the doctors from Howard University, but also get some of your numbers and get a free screening.
What time is this available?
From 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. in the Ambulatory Care Center in front of the auditorium.
Okay, Ambulatory Center at Howard University in the Towers Building.
Yes.
Is that correct? Well, we appreciate that. I want to go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Sharon calling from Waldorf. Hey, Sharon, how are you?
Just fine.
What's going on? What's on your mind?
Well, I had one quick question or possible advice. I had a heart attack on the 16th. And 2 weeks ago.
Last month?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Go ahead.
And the cardiologist, they placed one stent. And, you know, I just want to know what more should I be doing besides, he suggested exercise and adjust my diet. And since this was very sudden and eye-opener for me, it seems like I should be doing more. Sometimes I feel small little chest pain still in my chest, but I don't know whether to act on it or what to look for.
Well, those are all very important questions. The first thing is, if you are at all worried, is to seek medical attention. You don't want to wait on something that could be very serious. But the other thing is, after a heart attack or after getting a stent, we often do encourage exercise, but it depends on if you had a major heart attack or if you had a stent for another reason. Sometimes we want you to exercise, but sometimes we'll ask you to wait a little bit before starting exercise so you don't start it too soon after a heart attack.
Oh. I assume that it wasn't major because I started a regimen of 15 minutes on a treadmill and a bike within their program.
Okay.
So it was a total of 30 minutes. So I'm assuming it wasn't a major heart attack because I remained conscious and I was able to call 911 and got the help that I needed and was conscious through the whole thing. It just seems like I just don't want to miss. Is there any more that I should be doing so this doesn't happen again besides a diet? It wasn't said to me per se the reason why I had a heart attack. It was just suggested change your diet and exercise.
You can,
Dr. Curry, well, can I also add perhaps she may need cardiac rehab because that's one of the things a lot of times now everybody are not aware or familiar about once having a heart attack or a heart episode is getting cardiac rehab.
What is cardiac rehab?
Well, cardiac rehab is excellent. It's a supervised exercise program that after you've had, say, a stent placed in the artery after a heart attack or bypass surgery. So let's say you want to exercise, but you're a little bit nervous after having the event. You go in where somebody is there who's trained. They can watch you while you exercise. They can help you with your nutrition, help you with your smoking if you're a smoker. There's group activities. They can talk about what happens after a heart attack or after being diagnosed. There's exercise programs, and you have 36 sessions over several weeks.
Mm-hmm. But she said that since the stent was placed, in her heart. She's felt discomfort. Should she be alarmed by that?
If there's discomfort after getting a stent, that I think I would be err on the side of caution and talk to your doctor and seek medical attention. That's something you don't want to wait on and think that it might not be something serious and miss something serious. And you can have a major heart attack and be conscious the whole time.
Okay.
Right.
Well, Sharon, thank you so much for calling, and we certainly, you know, wish you the best of health.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about heart health tonight. This is, of course, Heart Month, so we're trying to make sure that you are taking care of your heart with proper eating, proper exercise, and, of course, proper medical attention. Jennifer, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. I just want to know if there's certain tests that should be part of a normal physical exam for persons over 45 when they go on their doctor's visit. And I ask this because when my husband went for his physical, part of his examination included the stress test, so it included getting on a treadmill. When I went for mine, it was just simply listening to my heart, and that was about it, you know, the standard blood work and blood pressure and so forth. But I wondered why there was such a distinction between the two of us, if, you know, if there's certain tests that they do more so for men than women, or, you know, if I should be looking for another provider because mine is not as thorough as she should be.
It depends on what your risk factors are, your baseline blood pressure. We use how old you are, your family history. We'll use several factors to guide whether or not to do a stress test. If somebody has symptoms at all, if we hear something abnormal, say, during the physical examination. So we try to use your overall history. And so let's say you have something like diabetes or high blood pressure. We might be more inclined to do a stress test than if you don't.
But I think more to the point, and I think she really didn't put too fine a point on it, where she said, you know, if her husband is on the treadmill and they've got him running and breathing hard and sweating and all of that kind of stuff, and then she's just sitting there. Are there gender-specific tests? Or should everyone also undergo a stress test? Should everyone undergo a blood test?
Everyone should not undergo a stress test. There's not a blanket recommendation. It really depends on your risk profile, because we use a stress test to help guide us, but it depends on your risk profile, your diabetes, your family history, blood pressure. Other tests, such as your cholesterol levels, your good and bad cholesterol levels, your hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of whether or not you have diabetes and how well it's controlled, your body mass index. There are other things that actually will play a very important role that aren't as, they don't seem as active as a stress test, but they're also very important.
Okay. Jennifer.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about heart health tonight. Let's go to Marilyn. Hey, Marilyn, calling from Northern Virginia. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing excellent. How is everyone doing?
Good. Well, that's good that you're doing excellent. So what's on your mind?
Well, I was very athletic, so that means my blood pressure and my pulse usually runs low. And it usually runs like 90 over 60 or 100. The highest ever been is like 110 over 60. Sometimes I even go down to in the 50s. But I have starting to have like chest pains and stuff, and I end up going to the hospital, and they told me that my blood pressure is like at 130 over 90, but that's normal. I shouldn't have to worry about that. I'm like, no, that's not normal for me. And I went to the hospital because I was having palpitations, pain in my jaw going towards my back, going down my arm, and I'm like, I don't understand this. But my question is, why is it that every time I have to go through this big old statement with people saying that that is not normal for me, for my blood pressures to be up to 120 over 70, which is a standard normal, or 130 over 80? Like, I don't understand that. And they kind of overlook my symptoms and say, you know, it's nothing.
Marilyn, let me see if Dr. Curry can at least address that, because I think you're asking a really important question. Dr. Curry?
Well, I think the most important part of that is if you feel like they're overlooking symptoms, because no matter what your blood pressure is, whether it's high or low, if you go in with symptoms, that's something that has to get addressed. If your blood pressure is normal and even not a concern because it's perfectly controlled, if you go in with symptoms such as pain going to the jaw or left arm or something that could be concerning, there should be some sort of explanation. If it's not a heart attack, or which we hope it's not, there are other things that could be, but that's something that still does have to have some sort of evaluation and be addressed.
And let's, while Marilyn is on the line, I do want to talk about some of the symptoms, because she just talked about a jaw pain, you know, from her jaw going down her back. You just talked about pain going down the arm. Men talk about pain going down the arm. Women talk about headaches. We talk about tremors. We talk about what on earth can someone, you know, pinpoint? Because some of these things sound like symptoms from a stroke. Some of these things may be because you're just tired. Some things could be because, you slept wrong. I mean, so how do you know?
Well, there are a few things. Well, the first is, if it was a stroke, you would still call 911. Mm-hmm. Because that's also a cardiovascular disease, and it's also one of the top killers. But the most common is chest pain or chest pressure. It could be nausea, gas pains, indigestion, burning in the chest. For things like fatigue, if you're fatigued because you've done something, you've been out all day, you've been running around, you haven't slept, you might feel tired. But if you have fatigue that you can't explain, and you sleep 10 hours and you're still fatigued, that's a sign of something a little bit different. It could be a heart disease, it could be something else also, but that's something that's more concerning. If you have a feeling of your heart skipping, racing, if you feel your heart beating abnormally, that may be a sign of something also. Aside from things like a heart attack, it could be a sign of a rhythm problem of the heart. Breathing difficulty. Some people, you may be out of shape and say, I'm going to go out and join a gym and do something for the first time in 5 years, and you're in terrible shape and you feel it. But if you're somebody who does the same thing every day, then all of a sudden you can't do the things you have been doing. Normally, you can walk up the stairs to your apartment, or normally you can walk around the grocery store, but now you have to stop because you can't breathe. Or now when you move, you notice you have symptoms, you feel discomfort. It's that change in what is normal for you.
Okay, because that, and before I let you go, Marilyn, and this is the important thing, because, what if, you all of a sudden feel nausea? So you're suggesting, for example, nausea or heartburn without eating,
yes,
may be more likely an issue than if you just came from dinner and an hour later you felt nausea and heartburn because you got a bad burger or you may have acid reflux. Is that the kind of thing that you need to pay more attention to?
You do, and it depends on, there's certain things that may make you prone to having heartburn or indigestion. But indigestion and heartburn that come on for no reason, or if you have that while you're walking for no reason, that's often a different sign.
Okay. Marilyn, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Can I also add something?
Sure, real quick.
Because one of the things, especially with women, is that in one of the American Heart Association's campaigns is to dial 911. Because if you're not sure, one thing we do not want you to do is try to diagnose yourself. Because too often people do say, oh, this is acid reflux, well, I'm going to take an aspirin and lay down, when that is in fact not the case. And so we recommend that you dial 911 and that, or you go and be checked out just to be sure.
Okay. Marilyn, thank you so much. We appreciate your phone call. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about diet. We're going to talk about exercise. Also, want to talk about that aspirin a day. What is that about? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about heart health during this Heart Health Month. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about heart health during this Heart Health Month with Dr. Brian Curry, Harvard University cardiologist, and Gail Harris-Berry. She's an American Heart Association ambassador. She's also a heart attack survivor. Let me go back to the phone lines at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Anitra calling from South Florida. Anitra, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
Can you hear me okay?
Just fine. Go right ahead.
Okay, perfect. I missed the comment about nuclear medicine. However, I hear you guys talking about the heart attacks and such. But if your person has an ICD or if you have a weak heart, I know that after they do the test and they do the echocardiogram or the and the EKGs, and they see that your heart level or your effraction is going down, they'll start doing nuclear medicine, and then they would recommend an ICD. However, I agree with a lot of the people that callers are saying that it's almost like once you talk to a doctor, they're not giving you more information. You need more information. You need more. If you feel something different, you tell them about it, but they don't get. It's hard to kind of explain what's happening to you sometimes.
Well, before we continue, let's back up, because she mentioned a lot of alphabet soup that a lot of people don't understand. She mentioned ICD. She mentioned, she talked about the echocardiogram. She still had a question about nuclear stress. So let's back up first and figure out what it was that she was trying to share with us.
The first thing is the ICD, that's the defibrillator. So if someone has a weak heart or certain arrhythmias, that would get implanted to shock the heart back to normal if needed. So there's certain types of heart disease that we will put a defibrillator in. That will save their lives if needed.
Okay. And you said you had a question about the nuclear testing. What's your question, Anitra?
You mentioned a nuclear stent. For me, I know that I don't exactly understand the nuclear testing. You can explain, give me a little bit more information, not from having a stent, but from what does it do? All I knew is about a needle goes in your hand, and if something goes through your body, and they can see something different.
Go right ahead, Doc.
But nobody really explains it, and it's hard to get them to explain it because I understand they're on a time frame.
Well, let me see if Dr. Curry can explain that for you now. Dr. Curry, go right ahead, please.
Okay, well, basically, there are several types of stress tests. The nuclear stress test is one where they will inject you with a radioactive tracer, which attaches to the blood and goes into your heart. So when they put you in the scanner, the heart muscle lights up. If it's normal, it lights up very brightly. They will stress you. They put you on the treadmill just like they do for the plane treadmill test and inject you again to see if your heart lights up after you've had exercise. If it's normal, it should light up the same way before and after. If you're abnormal, meaning you have a blocked artery someplace, or a weak heart, you'll see differences in your heart strength, or you will see areas that don't light up the way they should, which will tell us that there's possibly a blocked artery in one part of your heart.
Okay. Well, Anitra, thank you so much for your phone call. And don't stop asking those questions of your physician as it relates to your heart health or any other issue. I want to go back to Gail. Are you there?
Yes.
Gail, so talk to me a little bit about your diet now compared to your diet before you began to have these heart issues.
Okay, so one, I monitor my sodium intake because I know that sodium works against you as it relates to hypertension. And so in addition to monitoring my sodium intake, I also monitor not eating a lot of processed meats like lunch meats and hot dogs and things like that. Try to eat mostly fresh fruits and vegetables. I'm not a vegetarian, so I do eat meat, but I just monitor how much I do on a regular basis. And then I've increased my exercise. I have an activity tracker, and so I get in at least 5 miles of walking. I joined a fitness center, and I go exercise a few times a week. And so that has really helped me.
Did you exercise before?
Not on a consistent basis. I exercise 7 days a week now,
mm-hmm.
every day.
Was it hard to start that?
Well, when you think in terms of dying and living, no, mm-hmm. it's not that hard. I spent 3 weeks in a coma. You did hear that part, right?
Yes, I did hear that. Yeah, that's another show. I want to find out what was happening then also. But so what kind of foods did you eat prior to? I mean, did you eat fried foods?
Yes, it's nothing. There's no type of food that I don't like, I don't think. So I will eat whatever it is I wanted. But now I do. I don't eat as much fried food. I don't, like I said, with the process, I want monitor my sodium intake. And I also took, even though I'm not diabetic, but diabetes runs in my family. So I went to the endocrinologist and I took their classes. So I know how to eat properly so that my A1C stays at a level that will not take me into diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit more about diet and exercise, Dr. Curry. Some of the things that your patients did prior to getting sick or having heart incidents and that you've tried to steer them away from or steer them towards?
Well, first of all, what she's doing is phenomenal, and it's great. I think the thing that a lot of people do, and all of us are guilty of at some point, is you're busy, you're running around, you're in the car all the time, and you pick up something fast.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have time to cook, and so you go through a drive-thru, you pick up something in the store, and you don't look at the labels, you don't know the fat, the salt, it's overly processed. And things in moderation are okay, but sometimes you do that, you know, if your kids are going to soccer, baseball, scouts, dance, and you do that 5 days a week, and then suddenly you don't have time to exercise, it becomes more of a habit. And so we try to get people to eat less of the fried and processed foods. It's difficult to tell people just don't eat this and don't eat that because people say, well, what can I eat? I like X, Y, and Z. So you don't want to tell people just what they can't have so they feel restricted. You want to tell them what they can eat and how to make healthy choices. So eat more fresh fruits and vegetables, more unprocessed foods, more baked, grilled foods, less fried food, and smaller portions of meat. And so a lot of times what we consider portions are very large if you see a restaurant-sized portion, but if you look at the American heart-sized portions, it's 4 ounces is one serving.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're still talking about heart health today. We may even have a phone call coming in right now. If we could pick that phone call up, please. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I guess the thing that we are also hearing a lot about has to do with, people who are having heart-related issues that are not, they are not older. We're talking about people that are in their 20s and 30s who may not have even had history. Are those just kind of medical flukes, or is there an issue with people that are in their early adult years that still may have problems?
We are seeing more young people with heart disease, such as coronary disease, due to the obesity epidemic and earlier onset of diabetes than they saw 30 or 40 years ago. A lot of that has to do with the differences in the levels of activity, where kids don't go outside and run around all day and play. Everything is computerized now, and it's so much easier to eat something that's processed than it's the exercise, it's the change in diet, the change in your general activity.
Mm-hmm. And what about the folks who have had heart issues, and the doctor tells them to take a children's aspirin daily? Why is that? What does a children's aspirin actually do?
The aspirin prevents your platelets from making clots inside of the arteries. And aspirin, even though it's cheap, it's been around for years, it's over the counter, it actually prevents death by over 30% after a heart attack.
That's amazing. Let me go back to the phone lines. Jay calling from Joint Base Andrews. Jay, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, when I was in high school, I had rheumatic fever. Mm-hmm. I was during the summer, and I was real dizzy one summer. And they diagnosed me, I had rheumatic fever. And they gave me some pills and aspirin or whatever, and it went away, I guess. And now I'm 65, but walking is just really taxing these days. You know, it's my heart begin to feel funny when I walk a lot, you know, especially steps and stuff like that. I mean, I don't get much sleep, but because I work two jobs, and I want to know, is that something that's coming back on me?
Well, that's a good question, because rheumatic fever, which we don't see in this country as much as we used to, but rheumatic fever at a young age will affect your heart years later. It may cause disease of the valves of the heart, which are the little doors inside the heart that make your blood go in one direction. You can have calcium deposits. You can have leaky heart valves. And there's things that can happen now that could be related to rheumatic fever years ago.
Mm. So what should he do?
At this point, you should see your doctor and let him do a physical examination to see how your heart sounds or if there are any unusual, any changes from before. Your doctor might order an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of your heart, to get a good look at how strong your heart is and see if there has been any damage from the rheumatic fever history.
Okay. Well, Jay, we certainly wish you the best of health. I only have about a minute or so left, so I will let Gail have that last minute. Some final thoughts, Gail, about taking care of one's heart.
Well, it would be that, which has already been stated, one, that we monitor our food intake as it relates to processed foods, fresh vegetables, limiting the amount of fried foods that you eat, get in a good amount of exercise. You know, the American Heart recommendation is 10,000 steps a day. And so get that exercise in, drink your waters. And if you have been diagnosed with with hypertension, take your medicine. A lot of times people won't take their medicine to keep their blood pressure in control.
Absolutely.
And so that's going to be a key also. And, of course, reducing your sodium intake. And you don't have to be a hypochondriac about it, but be vigilant about it. When you know that there is something going on in your body, go see your doctor. Don't try to diagnose yourself. Don't take it into your own hands, because that's what they're there for.
Okay, Dr. Brian Curry, Gail Harris-Berry, thank you so much, Gail. Good health to you. Take care of yourself, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. And, of course, Dr. Curry, good to see you as always, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight.
Thank you.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Monday, February 13th. I'm Harold Fisher.